This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love. And we're here to help. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
It's Tuesday again. Welcome back to the podcast. That means we're doing a Topic Tuesday, and we're in the middle of our really cool list series that is the best cars, in our opinion, from every brand. We're going alphabetical. We've got another about 10 more we're doing this time. I'm going to throw this out there. If there are other car list topics you guys would like to hear us talk about, I mean, this was an obvious one to us. If there's other things you'd like to hear from us on, we're always listening to Topic Tuesday ideas. Give us an email, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com. Send an email there, and we'd love to hear your thoughts.
Another reminder about our upcoming Hooked on Driving travel. We are splitting up. Todd is going back to Laguna Seca for track days 5th and 6th. That's Friday and Saturday, and you'll
be
there.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool.
In April 2024, and Chance and I are going to be traveling to the East Coast to see our regional owners out there. First, we're flying into Orlando to go to Sebring Raceway. We'll be there all day on April 5, 2024. And we're going to be there, as I said, all day. That's a Hooked on Driving day at Sebring.
There's still space available. You should come.
There is still space available. Come say hello. Yeah. And then we'll be traveling up to New Jersey Motorsports Park to see our Northeast regional owners up there. And that will be on the 6th and 7th. We won't get in on the Saturday, the 6th. We won't get in until probably mid to late afternoon. But then we'll be there for Sunday, April 7th, Cars and Coffee at New Jersey Motorsports Park. There is plenty of space in the paddock. Mm-hmm. Bring your car. Come out from 9 to 11 at New Jersey Motorsports Park. Bring a favorite beverage. There will be some coffee on hand, but if you've got something else that you like to drink, non-alcoholic, of course.
Yes, you will be driving.
Please bring that.
I'm a little jealous because you're going out there and I'm not getting to see the East Coast stuff yet, but of course we had so much going on at these two different events that Paul and I decided we should divide and conquer. So we're going different places, but we hope you'll actually, if you're on the East Coast, run out to New Jersey Motorsports Park and see Paul and Chance Sunday morning the 7th. It'd be really cool.
And like you said, there's space available for both events, whether you're in the Northeast or the Southeast. Mm-hmm. You can get on track with Hooked on Driving, and then we'll be there hanging out, taking some photos, and seeing the tracks. Some interesting news from McLaren. They have announced their capital reorganization, under which a long-term strategic investor called Bahrain Mumtalakat Holding Company, that is the sovereign wealth fund of the Kingdom of Bahrain, they have taken full ownership of the share capital of McLaren Group Limited.
Isn't that interesting?
They own it outright, so I guess McLaren isn't a British brand anymore.
Isn't that interesting?
They sold their headquarters and leased it back.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of sales of McLaren. It's our understanding the 750S has now sold out for a couple of years.
Crazy.
Hugely popular. Mm-hmm. At least the car scene, the supercar scene in Utah has exploded with McLarens.
Yes, it's amazing. They're the brand, unlike Ferrari, that you can just go buy one.
Yeah.
You don't have to have had five prior. You don't have to be able to show your pedigree. You can buy one now, you know. And they also have a different, how do I put this? They have a different reputation or different perception in people's minds than Lamborghini, which is the other brand you can walk in and buy.
Yeah,
McLaren
true,
has a different mystique, if you will. So it's fascinating. We see a ton of them here. Look, I don't know if this will matter. I mean, this is a brand that had money already in McLaren, and now they've fully taken it over. So they were already somewhat involved.
They had like 60% ownership already, and they've taken the last 40%, and they are fully outright 100%.
It'll be interesting to see, does this matter or not? But it is a big change, and it certainly, to your point, is not a British brand. I think that's fascinating.
Jaguar Land Rover isn't owned by the Brits anymore.
Totally agree. This happens worldwide. Many brands are not owned by me. Come on. Lotus that I love is owned by Geely.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ton of brands that are not owned by who you think they are anymore. And this is another one, but it's fascinating. Other news, talking about brands we love, Porsche, I'm actually going to say this because I think it's going to hurt Paul to say it. The current version of the Cayman and Boxster, the 718, is being killed. And it's being killed for the strangest reason I feel like I've ever read. Now, I'm gonna jump to the side to come back. The reason the Lotus Elise stopped being sold in the U.S. is because the regulation changed. And in the U.S., you had to have two-stage airbags. Which meant if you got in a crash that wasn't that severe, the airbag only exploded to one degree. If you got in a serious crash, it exploded to another degree. Well, the Lotus Elise had never been designed for that. And the cost to re-up it for the U.S. market, they just said, forget it, we'll stop selling it.
It was like smart airbags versus advanced smart airbags.
Exactly right. It was one of those kind of changes. But that was like a U.S. NTSB regulation, if memory serves. The reason the Porsche 718 is being killed, it's being killed in Europe specifically because it does not meet, and follow till the end here, folks, it does not meet new cybersecurity regulations for vehicles. And in order for Porsche to comply, they would have to rewire the car. And since there is a new model coming that will be EV in some degree, they decided to kill selling it in Europe at all for now, except for the super limited RS versions of the Cayman GT4 RS and the Boxster Spyder RS. They're going to kill the rest of them because of this regulation. But where it goes completely sideways for us, this is not a European crash regulation. It's not a regulation from anybody you would expect to be involved in cars. This is a cybersecurity regulation thrown down by the United Nations.
UN Regulation Number 155, stating all new vehicles sold in the EU to meet certain cybersecurity standards alongside organizational processes and controls. Otherwise, they're not eligible for registration starting July 1st, 2024, but that also affects the Macan.
Mm-hmm. That's why the Macan is in a stop sale as well until they have the old EV ones out coming out. But of all the people to hinder a car's sale, and let me put it another way, of all of the people for a car brand to be concerned about, the United Nations? Really?
It is a strange,
strange
piece of news that has come across our desks here. However, Porsche knows they've got worldwide customers.
Oh, yes.
So I still see all of these models continuing to be built in their current forms, but they could invest in completely re-architecting the entire vehicle. That certainly is a possibility.
Yeah, but with the new one coming, they're just going to stop.
But then there's
a
new one coming.
Yeah.
But I also wonder if Porsche is going to reconsider just doing a straight battery EV version of the Cayman and Boxster. I wonder if they will decide that there still is a market for both or a hybrid version of the two. I feel like they would be missing on sales if they did not. But I wonder what this new regulation is going to do to completely rethink that, or if they can in time, because apparently we're only 2 years away from this happening for the new generation Cayman and Boxster.
Yeah, which I'm hearing is also, it's proving to be, let's be honest, difficult for them to get that car properly done. So, you know, you would like to carry the current model up into the next model, but in Europe, that's not going to happen, apparently, because of the United Nations. This is the thing about it, I think, is so strange.
It is strange. And the Macan is Porsche's top-selling model globally, selling close to 21,000 cars in the U.S. alone. That means disappearing from the European market means that directly affects the sales and revenue. That's a volume seller right there. So you know Porsche is going to reconsider and doing something because the Cayman and Boxster is still so hallowed, I feel like.
Yeah.
Whatever happens in the future, I don't think that means a death blow to the model itself. It certainly means a complete re-architecture and rethink to meet cybersecurity regulations.
Well, and will they speed up the current EV one? I mean, coming back to the airbag regulation, when this airbag regulation came down and killed the Elise, what happened with the Evora was they didn't sell it in the U.S. for a year. Well, they spent the time and money on the Evora to make the dual stage airbags, and then it came back. It was missing for like a year, year and a half. So will Porsche do the same thing on the Cayman Boxster? Who knows? Or I wouldn't be surprised if they just try to hang on until the new version. Mm-hmm, but that's a fascinating reality. What a bizarre story.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
We're excited to announce a new partnership with Battery Tender. If you park your car for any length of time, you need it to start. The last thing you want is to hear that labored whine of a dead battery. That's why you need a Battery Tender battery charger to properly maintain your battery in your vehicle, give it a long life, and quick starts every time. We're already customers. We use Battery Tender battery chargers on all our cars, year-round, and especially through the snowy winter months here in Park City.
Since 1965, Deltran Battery Tender has been the leader in battery chargers. Their BTP microprocessor technology and quick connect convenience automatically maintains the batteries in all of your vehicles. Lead acid, AGM, or lithium. Keep your batteries in top condition. Visit BatteryTender.com to find the right product for you, including battery chargers, jump starters, inverters, and more. Plus, as our listeners, you can use the code EVERYDAY to get 10% off your order at BatteryTender.com. Our best of series continues.
Yes.
This episode tackles Infinity through Lotus. We do have a few extras in here I thought we could touch on just briefly, but okay. We were diving into Infinity, and I had a lot of trouble coming up with Infinities that I really like and I think are special, except for the concept cars.
Okay.
I'm going to start here with the QX55, that crossover coupe. Mm-hmm. I actually like the shape, and I think it's a small, interesting, compelling SUV. But if you go to Infinity USA's website, well, wherever you are on the planet, go to Infinity's website. It will direct you to the country nearest you or the country that you currently reside in, and you will see that all the front ends look pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing the new QX80 is coming, but I feel like that's going to be a mild reskin at best. I don't know that, well, it's Nissan behind the scenes. I don't know that they're going to completely re-architect the entire truck.
Don't expect they will.
It's just a reskin. It will drive pretty much the same. Maybe the power delivery will be a little bit different, but you know it's just design to get the new QX80 out there. So it's not really new in my opinion. But I will say all the concepts for Infiniti up to now have been quite inspired.
Okay.
Moving forward from this point in time, we're looking at the QX65 and new concepts that I am not excited about, especially when you outline the bodywork with LEDs in the front in a not very beautiful way. I'm not really encouraged. I hope those just kind of go by the wayside and they rethink. Because if you look to the past, starting with the Essence concept from 2009, that's just pure sculpture.
Mm.
The essence of a GT car, and that's the name of the concept. And then we had the Q50 Eau Rouge concept from 2014. All the car enthusiasts at Nissan decided to plop a Nissan GTR engine in the sedan.
Yeah.
And they just decided, you know, I don't think anybody's going to buy it. They didn't make a business case. And I feel like enthusiasts the world over would have said yes to that.
I agree that there's interest there. I don't know how much. The problem is a couplefold, because I do have one car on my list here. And that is the Q50 Red Sport 400. That is the really good 400 horsepower V6 that ultimately became the engine in the new Nissan Z. But at the time, they didn't have anywhere else to put it. They put it in the Q50, which is their four-door sedan that is a revision of the G35 sedan.
Yeah, okay? I feel like the Red Sport was trying to be what this concept was.
Well, that was their. That was what they decided to do, was that one instead of the concept with the GTR engine. And I think it's funny because on the Infiniti US website, it describes the Q50 as in a class of its own. And I thought, yes, because everything else has been updated. I hate to say it.
Surpassed it in every way.
But I mean, the thing about the Q50, which I actually, the last time we drove it was the Red Sport 400, which I actually thought it was a great engine in an okay car. And I was looking for a cool car for it to be in, and the Z is that. But that at least made that car interesting. And I really did like the engine. I just felt like everything around me was exactly what it is, and that is, why is this all so old and you're trying to figure it out? They've got a double screen architecture in the center because you're still using an architecture that was the better part of 15 plus years old to try to get enough touch screens and stuff in there. So it really struggles with being modern enough, but that engine was great and made the car interesting. I wish Infiniti would be more than just reskinned models from Nissan. Infiniti is headed the way of Lincoln, where we're just going to make SUVs that have the underpinnings of a different brand below us. And I struggle with the Infiniti lineup because I feel like, with the possible exception of that Red Sport, I feel like I would buy the Nissan version or a competitor's version instead of the Infiniti.
I am adamant that the GTR engine should have been used elsewhere in the lineup, especially a sedan.
It is surprising.
That would have made it compelling and I think more accessible to people. Why do people buy AMG cars and M-powered cars?
That's a good point. It's a very good point.
Absurd power, 500, 600, 700 horsepower, and yet those sell like crazy. This could have differentiated Nissan because it wouldn't have been offered in the Nissan lineup. You had to go to Infiniti to get that special engine,
I
but
like
now
that.
It's in a sedan. That would have been a compelling car. Two others on my list, they're still concepts, but this could have been paid more attention to set the direction for Infiniti. And that was, first of all, the Prototype 9. I think this is superb. It's an e-roadster based on 1940s style, inspired by the Prince Motor brand, roadsters, and aircraft of the era. It is absolutely gorgeous. Infiniti, the brand, has the chops to be able to do sculpture, rolling sculpture.
It looks gorgeous.
And something that is unique to Infinity, because you're right. I look on the website and I think anything currently that Infinity builds, it's just a more expensive version of a Nissan. So why would you even consider it?
Yeah, it's difficult.
It's pointless, actually. And then finally, the Prototype 10 concept. That is a classic speedster. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Prototype 9 did not have fenders. Okay, it needs to remain a concept.
Sure, yeah,
but the Prototype 10 was a classic speedster, and that could have made enthusiasts come to the Infiniti brand, and all this from the brand that was associated with F1 at the time. They were directly connected to Red Bull.
Yes,
So they could have parlayed that into, look, we have a racing history, we've got a racing enthusiast motorsports brand, and come to Infiniti to get that different flavor, but yet nothing has been capitalized on.
Yeah,
it's very frustrating, and I personally don't understand why you would consider buying any current Infiniti.
Okay, I think we can leave that one there. We can move on to Jaguar. Jaguar, where are you on this? I have a couple of thoughts, but I'm very curious where you are on Jaguar.
I lament McLaren not being a British brand anymore, but I also question what is British about the Jaguar brand currently.
Okay.
Because it's not really, by the same metric, it's not really a British brand anymore, even though, yes, they're built there. They suffer from a poor naming convention. And whoever was in charge of the
That's a good point.
Naming convention for E-Paces and I-Paces, you're trying to re-educate the public that really knows that that's not what that means.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. The E-Pace should be the electric car, but it's not. It's the smaller version of your SUV, which for some reason is the F-Pace. Which is already weird.
I mean, the E-Type will forever be on my list. Rules or not, the E-Type is the most beautiful car.
It may
car
be
ever.
Out of contention here, but yeah, I take your point. I get your point. Yeah, fine.
But the follow-up to that would be the F-Type, and I really love the F-Type.
I'm a big fan, too.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I want it to become more than it is. I feel like they've stopped, and they didn't go fully into motorsports, and they didn't go a full kind of hardcore version of that. I mean, they kind of did with the R, but something lightweight, something that is really a true driver's car, appealing to drivers, rather than just still kind of being a larger, heavier GT kind of car.
The evolution of that car has certainly gone the way you're talking. I felt like it started and it could have been brilliant. And what
so
I'm saying
promise.
Is when it first started, the V6, and then it, like a year in, they offered a V6 manual. That's a unicorn find. That's the F-Type you want. And I'm pulling them up in front of me right now, the F-Type manuals. There's not very many even available because not very many were sold. But the V6 with the manual, I remember they had this one year at the LA Auto Show, this fantastic pamphlet. It was like a 1960 style instruction manual. About how to drive a manual transmission in that kind of 60s news voice. You could just tell it when you read it. It was like 60s news voice. Here's what you need to know. It was that kind of
thing.
That's funny. It really made me laugh at the time because they were re-educating the public on the manual. There weren't very many out there. But in V6 form, I thought it was a fantastic, weird alt between the Z-Car Supra area of cars and the 911. It was like somewhere in the middle. Mm. It felt like if you got in the lower forms, you'd bought the less expensive 911, but it wasn't a 911. I thought it was a fantastic alternate car. The problem with it now is they've tried to take it upmarket because you used to be able to get them for somewhat decent prices and you can actually get them used
Jag is an upmarket brand.
Yes, true. But the problem is that an F-Type right now, I just looked at one, the base F-Type is $77,000 with no options. And you can get them up to 120.
Seriously.
I'm sorry. I like the F-Type very much.
I agree.
In that price spec, I'm buying something else. If it tapped out at 80 or 90 and it started high 50s, it's a serious alt of an automobile. You push it up market from there, and I think you just buy something else.
There's 10 other cars on the list before that even appears on your
list
of considerations.
It's too bad. I think it has better dynamics than most people realize, and it's a cool place to be and drive.
I was looking around the website. And I thought to myself, who buys an E-Pace? Who is specking out an E-Pace on the Jaguar website and thinking, I can't wait, because at that price, have, to use your term, you've walked by so many other better, more viable, less expensive options that look better, drive better, they give you more for your money, they're more modern. I don't understand why this car still exists.
I agree. You and I drove one when it first came out, and that was years ago.
It's been a few years.
And I think it was like 2018, 2019. And since then, I'm not kidding, I think I have seen one on the road. the E-Pace. Now, the E-Pace is smaller than the F-Pace. What a terrible naming convention, you're right, for their SUVs.
I mean, somebody
but
just was
the
not
F,
thinking.
The F-Pace is the Cayenne competitor, so if you want to think about it this way, the E-Pace is the Macan competitor. But I literally think I've seen one in the wild.
You know, I understand it's really for European size
kind of roads.
Yeah. I definitely get it. It's not competitive in any way, so why does it still exist? And Jaguar is a higher-end luxury brand. It's got to be on par with Range Rover. It's got to be a beautiful alt. And the styling is actually on everything. There's something to like on every car and SUV. Mm-hmm. You can find surfaces that are actually quite beautiful and sculptural. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is British. They know how to do beautiful sculptural design. But I'm just seeing them move away from it. And who thinks now, I want to buy a Jag? Unless it's an E-Type, are you considering a Jag? And my question to you is, what is compelling about it that other car companies don't offer for less money?
Oof, that's hard. Okay, we're moving on to Jeep. Jeep, the classic American brand, the seven stripes in the grill and the two headlights and the 4,500 visual Easter eggs on the car somewhere. They do it better than anybody as far as Easter eggs. I have to start right here and say, the 392 big growling V8 Wrangler is two things in equal capacity.
Okay.
It should not exist, and wow, it's awesome.
Yes.
Every time I've been in one, my brain hurts because these are the two parts of myself fighting. One part of it is, this is completely absurd and without purpose, and yet I'm a little child that doesn't want to get out of it. Bonus, it's a $100,000 Wrangler.
Unreal.
And there's nothing about it, except for the fact that it has that crazy engine. There's nothing about the 392 Wrangler that makes you go, yep, $100,000 vehicle. Nope. No. Look, you and I have driven terrible roads on major off-roading, a $50,000 2-liter turbo Rubicon.
Yeah.
That we put through its paces, like serious rock crawl off-roading.
Yeah.
And to realize that the difference between that and the 392 is engine. I doubled the price, and it's not like the 392 could have done the rock crawling better. It would have been cooler.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been better. I really struggle with the price of that thing, but I do have to admit I have drunk the Kool-Aid enough to say the 392 Wrangler is inexplicably awesome.
For me, anything Rubicon from Jeep, Rubicon, all the Jeeps, bring all that. I do appreciate that. And I'm right there with you with the 392 Wrangler. And it does have that X factor. And I wonder about price. And pricing something into the next level sort of makes it less obtainable to somebody who really wants it, but yet it makes it even more desirable.
Makes it aspirational.
Weirdly.
Okay. All right. I see it.
Suddenly it's, I can't afford it, but that just makes me want it even more. And the engine, that 2-liter Rubicon Wrangler was great at everything it did.
There was nothing wrong with it.
It was half the price. You're right.
And there was, but
it's not the one I want.
There was nothing compelling about the engine either. There was never a moment where we were like, oh, this engine's great. No, it was fine. It was fine.
I get wanted it. I get the 392. I must have it. I must have it. But you know, the other Wrangler that has impressed us along with the Grand Cherokee is the 4xe flavors.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I think that
really
trim is surprisingly good.
It is. I didn't think that I'd like it. And it's a hybrid, but we have generally liked a lot of hybrids. This was no exception.
I was very surprised. I will be honest. I kind of scoffed at the 4xe concept coming out of Stellantis, working its way to Jeep, and winding up with that 4xe badge. And I kept thinking, really? And then we drove it in the Wrangler and also in the Cherokee. And I was just like, you know what? This just works.
It just works.
I actually do like it. I really hope, and I'm going to put it out here right now, I really hope, in spite of the marketing materials, no one is actually spending money to put charge stations in the middle of some backcountry thing. Let's not do that. Let's really not do that. But the 4xe trim was really good. I will say that the Wrangler you want, nobody's going to believe me, but the Wrangler you want, if it's not the 4xe or if it's not the 392, the one you want is the one nobody buys. It's the two-door manual Wrangler.
It's awesome.
The two-door manual Wrangler. That's the one that I want. That's the one my wife used to have. It's one she wants again. It's
never
not the usable
one.
Never
stop making that. Stellantis, just never stop making that.
Two-door manual Wrangler. Nobody wants to buy that. Everybody wants the four-door. I need more space.
Yeah.
That's what the 392 came in, but that's the one that I want is the two-door manual. I will say I have a wild card in Jeep.
Okay.
I actually like the Renegade, and I like it for this reason.
Really?
Okay. Because it is their base vehicle. And we've talked about this already on some of the brands. I don't love the Renegade. I think it's absolutely okay to drive, but I think it is a design success.
Okay.
It stands out in the market. If you look at what it competes against, it is a mid-$20,000, so it is the base of their lineup, mid-$20,000 five-seat CUV. That is a sea of cheap sameness. And in that sea of, why are we buying these just because they're cheap? Everybody sells a CUV.
Why are we buying these?
In that world is the Renegade, which doesn't look like everybody else. It doesn't That's feel true. Like everybody else. Yeah. It's not a great engine. It's not. It's got a 9-speed. The transmission's not great. I didn't love driving it, but if I'm shopping in that level, that thing sticks up above the crowd, as does things like the Maverick. The things that stand out in that base price sea of boring CUVs, I pay attention to, and the Renegade is one of them.
You're right. Of any vehicle lineup, it is Jeep that has the most flexibility to lean on the rugged nature for
yes.
all of their models
yes.
and kind of overdo it. Almost
That's
a
good.
Little bit
That's
of cartoonish
good.
Kinds of proportions, and nobody cares because it's Jeep.
People that used to work at Tonka all now work at Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. yeah. And the thing
and
is,
works.
The Renegade is the 500X.
Yeah.
A vehicle I loathe. I loathe it. I just,
and
it
yet.
Should not exist. And here it is in Renegade form. And I'm going, yeah, that, you know, that I'd drive.
Styling matters. I was also looking on the Jeep website to discover the Grand Wagoneer starts at $92,000, begins at 92 grand. And I haven't driven the Grand Wagoneer yet, but I would run to a Suburban before. That Grand Wagoneer is going to have to really impress me to start at 92 grand.
Yes, and you not buy a Suburban instead.
And walk a past Suburban. A Suburban.
Yeah, you're right.
Or a GMC Denali.
Yes.
A Yukon in any size.
Yes.
Wow. All right, a side note over here to Karma, Henrik Fisker's second go-around with the car company.
His the one that he isn't doing now, because right now it's Fisker. This is
right.
the Karma. He made the Fisker Karma, and when that failed, this was built on the original Volt technology
uh-huh.
in huge monster four-door that wants to be a two-door shape with all these recycled materials. It was a very interesting car when we drove it, but it very much felt like we made a concept work.
Yes, and it was very heavily leaning on cool design,
mm-hmm.
and that's what you get when you mm-hmm. let designers lead the charge from
yep.
start to finish.
Yep.
You get an amazing-looking mm-hmm. car. It's a cool design, but the packaging, the actual functionality, maybe not as useful for many people, and the price is too high, but all the car design nerds absolutely geeked out. And
like
I
you,
loved
I got it.
It.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought it was fantastic.
This company folded. It got saved out of bankruptcy by somebody else who renamed, because it was Fisker Karma,
mm-hmm.
The car was the Karma. They renamed the brand Karma and kept selling it. Karma Rivero or something was the car for a while.
We
saw one in town recently, and you and I both nearly passed out. We were in the middle of a test drive.
Oh, no.
We pulled into a parking space to do our little swap to do to the test drive, and we cut it out. There's a 5-minute interlude in the middle of this test drive where we just went off about, is that really a new Karma? Somebody bought one?
Someone bought one?
It's got a dealer tag. They just bought it. What's going on? But now they are going into all EVs. I do not understand why this company exists or how it still exists. I don't get it.
The Rivero is an old Fisker Karma.
Yes, it is.
The Gaisera is a resculpted Fisker Karma.
Uh-huh.
But now here's where we leave the Fisker name behind.
The sure.
Kaivea is really cool styling. It's a cool GTEV. But who buys this? It's a 1,180 horsepower EV. Making 1,270 pound-feet of torque with an approximate 250-mile range. It weighs 5,300 pounds, and it has really cool dihedral doors. It's sweet-looking. I don't know who the buyer is.
I agree.
I wish them success.
Yeah.
They've rebranded, and they've gone with Karma. Okay. And they're still redoing the assembly line is still turned on, apparently, because they're still selling Riveros.
Somebody just left the lights on at night. They're still cranking those out, and nobody's buying them. It's very bizarre.
They left the machines on. It's still cranking out cars.
Uh-huh.
Quick, sell them. But I don't know who buys the Kaveya, and it's an interesting contrived name, and the car looks great. Again, the design part of me, I'm all in.
Sure,
all of these look great.
Well, you know, I'll go to the thing
who's buying.
Yeah, well,
we
got to
make money. Cars
that.
Are not a charity project here. We gotta sell them. People have to buy them so we can make more, so we can do the next one.
I am a guy that honestly, and I've done this on the podcast forever. I am not overly concerned about how do I get this car fixed when I buy it. I'll figure it out. But for something like Karma, who works on that? Who even knows if they crack it open what they're looking at?
Okay, what?
Seriously, I'm very confused. Yes.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Whatever car you're looking for, and wherever it's listed, you'll find it with AutoTempest.com. AutoTempest.com brings together results from all the top used car listing sites online to save you time and help you find the perfect car. It even lets you compare with nationwide results from Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist, not just your local area.
Plus, you can now get email alerts for your search, so you're sure to never miss a thing. You can even price and find new cars from nearby dealers. That's why AutoTempest is now the official sponsor of all of our test drive videos. We use it to search for new cars or used cars wherever they are.
When you're doing your drive homework, you're chasing the next family car, or just browsing so you can see what's available, go to AutoTempest.com/everyday so they know we sent you. AutoTempest. All the cars. One search. Moving on to Kia, long live the Stinger.
But not forgotten.
Yeah, I agree.
The Stinger GT was a phenomenal, great performance sedan. I had it on my list right there for the same reason.
Just the fact that that car existed and made its way through, the styling absolutely worked. I miss the Stinger. I agree. It's going to resurface with some sort of heavier...
It'll be an SUV.
...hybrid or something. Hopefully not. But speaking of SUVs, the Telluride is very high on my list.
Yes.
I do like the Carnival. There we
Carnival.
Go.
Carnival! Yes.
The Niro is okay, and we have yet to drive the EV6. But now I'm reading this news article about the EV9 GT, the three-row GT that hit the track. Why does a three-row BEV need to hit the track?
Mm-hmm.
What did I miss? Mm-hmm. Am I way off base here? Because why do any Range Rovers need to hit the track for any reason at all?
It's a great point.
They don't need to be on track. I don't want to see them on track because nobody takes their Range Rover on track. If you do, you will quickly realize that this is too heavy. It's just
You'd only do it for the laugh. You're not going to do it legitimately.
But it's so scary. Nobody's laughing. You don't see the driver and passengers go by laughing hysterically.
They're hanging onto the grand
handles. They're hanging on for dear life. They're scared out of their tree. So here's an EV9, the GT flavor, hitting the track. It doesn't need to be track tested.
That's
of
a great point.
Of all the vehicles on planet Earth, the EV9 did not make the list to hit the track.
I mean, we love the Telluride. The Telluride is the real standout here. And when the Telluride dropped, Kia, of all people, remade that market segment. The unibody 7-seat SUV, everybody kind of went, oh, that's a really good one.
And all of a sudden, you
could only buy them above MSRP. There were massive order lists for a Kia out of nowhere. Everybody's like, really? And then they changed their logo to the new current logo, which I really like, but everybody thinks is KN. It doesn't say KN, but side note. So the KN Telluride. But this is the thing. This was a class-defining 7-seater, so that is the bones that make the EV9. I'd like to drive the EV9. We haven't yet. I would still like to drive it. But I want to come back to your point, and that is I'm not sure who you're marketing to when you want to track your SUV, because the people that really want an SUV aren't looking for track tests.
No.
And
the people in the third row are going to hate you.
They're puking. And the people that are tracking something aren't looking at SUVs to do so.
No.
So I feel like you missed both targets. Fantastic. You hit nothing. It's really weird. I mean, I will say that in Kia, I have not driven the EV6, but it is essentially the Kia version of the Hyundai GV60, the Genesis GV60, which I really like, and I prefer the styling of the EV6. I like the EV6. I like the EV9. I'd like to drive both of those. Of course, the Carnival is a usable, if you have never seen our test drive, you don't understand the snaps. But anyway, is a usable minivan right down the middle. It's not a standout, but it's a decent competitor. I am very impressed with the Stinger. I cannot believe Kia ever made that, and I cannot believe they put the industry on notice with the Telluride. They're trying to do so with the EV9. And thank God they tracked it, Paul.
The starting price for the EV9 GT is approximately $78,800.
Mm.
It is supposed to be the most interesting, the fast, fun, comfortable, practical, bang for your buck, 7-seat EV BEV, SUV. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nothing about this needs to be tracked. You don't need to tune this vehicle on
track. Welcome to the next
track.
Hour, ladies and gentlemen.
Nobody buying the EV9 GT will care if it's tuned for track use, because you know what they'll say? I'm never going to take this on track.
Well, but you know what? We run this danger.
It will not sell because of track tuning.
We run the danger of it being less worthwhile as a 7-seat family vehicle because it was tuned for track use.
This is too harsh.
This is.
It's like you tuned this for the track. Oh, you did tune it for the track. Why would I buy it?
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
I'm going through Starbucks and kid pickup.
I don't need track tuning.
Neither of those have curbing. Every one of those has potholes.
Until Starbucks.
What are you doing?
Certifies each drive-through to FIA standards.
Yes.
With red and white curbing.
It's not a drive-through. It's the Starbucks race-through.
None of us need. I don't understand. What am I missing? Dual electric motors, 5.3 second 0 to 60. Okay, 314 miles range. Great. You can do all of those things without tuning it for the track. It didn't need to hit the track. There's many vehicles that do and should, and they are. And I welcome track tuning because that makes things interesting. And the sports cars and the fun cars, I'm baffled.
I know you could literally spend the next half hour just beating yourself up trying to make this make sense. Let's just move on.
The headline was the EV9 GT hit the track.
I heard
track
it.
Tuning.
I'm very excited.
What?
Doesn't matter.
Why?
We've missed all targets. All targets missed. I'm going to move on to Lamborghini. And I have to say that this is not really a brand that you and I gravitate toward. It has become, I hate to say this, it's become a YouTuber brand.
Yeah.
It's become a brand that is about, look at me, I have a Lamborghini. And I have never seen more people rev a car that was cold a minute ago to redline the minute they start it, like Lamborghini owners. Never seen so many. Also, we were on track with one that blew up after two laps, which was horrifying and funny all at once. I felt very bad for the owner,
and I
also could not believe we were out there in our $7,500 sports cars with no maintenance.
That are still running, actually.
An entire track day, yeah. And his brand new, still on dealer tags, 12-cylinder Aventador caught fire, and it wasn't being driven all that hard either. So there's a whole separate thing there.
Bad.
But on the other end of the spectrum, in spite of possibly one of the most meme-creating and laugh-inducing marketing campaigns, the Huracan Sturato, bravo. The marketing campaign was terrible.
Mm-hmm,
the weird voiceover and the terrible lines and all of the dirt, it's for the bold or gold.
It was all the cringe.
It was terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
But to a person, I would love to drive one. To a person, I have not known a single person. Meanwhile, I've not read a single reviewer, especially those that I trust, that don't go, how can you not love this?
Mm, sure.
I can't believe Lamborghini actually made it. Porsche, at least, with the Dakar, as much as I don't think that makes sense, I see the lineage.
Mm-hmm.
Lamborghini is just like throwing darts at the wall and going, let's build that. Let's just build an off-road one. I mean, because the Huracan...
And it's selling. It's working.
Absolutely. The Huracan has had so many variants for so long. It's been the more attainable Lamborghini, and they've done the 911 with it. They've done every variant they can think of, and they've made some hardcore variants that are rear-wheel drive that people love. The Huracan we drove a few years back was rear-wheel drive. We loved it. The Sturato is the all-wheel drive, off-road lifted Huracan, and I just have to tip my hat because I can't believe it exists, and it's good.
I'm glad you brought that up. And you may notice that we did not cover Ferrari in the last episode because,
true.
Todd, you brought up a good point that we haven't driven too many modern Ferraris.
Yes.
We would have liked to, and I didn't really want to rant for 90 minutes on how many engine codes an SF90 is expected to throw in your ownership time.
Whole separate problem.
And we thought, you know, all the Ferraris, they'll probably be fast and very comfortable and very special. I'm wondering what Ferrari's thinking over here with Lamborghini doing this Sturato concept. Mm. Do you think Ferrari would ever...
I don't think they care.
...dip a toe? And, I mean, their customer base probably doesn't care. I don't see even Lamborghini and Ferrari competing for the same customer either.
I don't think they do because Ferrari is road cars, not driven quickly, or race cars.
Although there are many, we are now meeting people that do use up Ferraris.
Yes,
and
true.
We champion that.
But in general, they're selling road cars intended to not be driven quickly, even though thankfully some owners do, or they're selling race vehicles. And I'm talking about, I'm not just talking F1, I'm talking about actual race cars you see used in other liveries.
Mm-hmm,
okay, competition cars, competizione versions, and all these kind of things.
Yeah.
So they do that. or they do cars intended to be driven slowly. They're very beautiful.
Yes.
And the weird person is the person that buys a Ferrari and drives it very quickly and beats on it because they bought the one that was supposed to be driven slowly. That's the weird thing about Ferraris. You do see this.
It's true.
I applaud them when they do it because that is driving against brand, okay? Ferrari was never intending that. Anyway, Land Rover. Land Rover is becoming just Range Rover, or Range Rover is just becoming Land Rover? I think it's Land Rover is going away, and now they're just going to call them Range Rovers because that's everybody knows them.
But if you go to LandRover.com and RangeRover.com, they go to the same exact place.
Uh-huh.
Did you notice?
Yeah, well, you know, this is how URLs are built. Moving on. This is when we have naming problems. We've had many of those on this episode. I will say that the Range Rover, the actual big Range Rover.
Yeah.
That is a standout. And that is the Rolls-Royce of off-roaders.
What is the Rolls-Royce? I guess they don't build an off-roader, do they?
They build a Cullinan, but it's not an off-roader.
I mean, there have been YouTubers that, well, we've seen a few concepts, separate thing. But still. You're
but
right.
The Range Rover is the Rolls-Royce of off-roaders.
It is.
It is the thing that when you drive a Range Rover, you do feel like you could take it anywhere with no caveats. I could take it anywhere. This mm-hmm, thing is, mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about a brand new one. I look at so much technology on them, stuff breaks. I know the
Scratch.
Legends. Yes. But it feels like you could take it anywhere you wanted that's crazy in whatever weather, and it would be perfectly happy to go. But then, this is always the thing, clean it up and take it anywhere nice.
Yeah.
So the Range Rover stands out. I struggle with everything else they make, including many people have, and I'm talking people that I trust as other reviewers too, have lauded the current Defender, and I do not get it. I do not get it.
Okay. I agree with you, and I really like Range Rover styling, especially the actual big Range Rover. Mm-hmm. I think it is superb. And again, a British brand, they know how to do styling. It's great. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
They're expensive. They're luxurious. I have felt the Range Rover Sport was not dynamic on the road in any way. Not sporty, yet it had the word sport on it. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand.
Sport means cheaper. In Range Rover parlance, sport just means cheaper.
I guess so. Yes. But here's a brand that has this absolute legacy, and it suffers just like Porsche Cayennes. Cayennes are not driven off-road very frequently,
nor are the
SUVs from BMW and Mercedes and Audi and all these luxury brands.
There is some really dirt in the race through at Starbucks today, so we may have to navigate
the
dirt.
FI-certified curbing at your local Starbucks. So it's not just Range Rover that suffers from the image kind of...
True, absolutely true.
Feeding that to their customers.
Yes.
So much so, did you know that we have something here on Park City Main Street called Range Rover House? Did you notice it? I was on Main Street just the other day, grabbing some food, and I looked over, and there's a building that says Range Rover on it, and it wasn't a dealership. Guests will find themselves immersed in the Range Rover lifestyle with curated après-ski programming and outdoor activities, exclusive culinary experiences, wellness sessions, and stunning views of Park City. This existed last year, but now in addition to Range Rover House, we also have the Park City Edition Range Rover. Only 7 of these have been built, but last year, do you remember, we had the Deer Valley Edition, only 20 were built, so they didn't probably sell them all, so now they're only building 7 of the Park City editions.
I'll go you one further. We are piling on to this brand, who again, I like the Range Rover, but we're piling on to this brand with very, very many things that make you want to hate their owners. And I will give you another one, and I hate to say this, but a few years ago, Deer Valley forever had been sponsored by Cadillac, and they had Cadillacs, and all the Deer Valley official vehicles were Cadillacs. That changed to Range Rover a couple of years ago. Of all the things for them to do, for Range Rover, this one, I feel like you're just begging those vehicles to get egged. Because when you go to a ski resort, the most important thing at the ski resort is, where did I park? How far away am I?
Yeah.
Deer Valley has an upfront row of Range Rover parking.
At a ski resort, everyone.
Those vehicles are going to get egged. No, actually, they're just going to get scratched by skis. You know, you're always, I've seen this. You walk between two cars carrying skis in your shoulder. People are just going to be like, down the Range Rover. I hope not. But Range Rover parking, you got special parking because you bought an extra expensive vehicle? No.
Alternatively, here's another viewpoint, and I will give Range Rover mad props. And I'm excited to discover this because Range Rover has experienced drives in California, North Carolina, and Vermont. But the best news is they have adventure travel. Mm. They have Defender Journeys in Namibia, Etosha National Park. Also, the Skeleton Coast is a self-drive, that's northwest Namibia, and an eight-day Botswana safari to Victoria Falls, Okavango Delta, Chobe National Park, and Maremme Game Reserve in Defenders as
Love
part
it.
Of the Range Rover community. So I almost feel like there is some crossover between their customers, but it's almost like the customers that value the Land Rover heritage and what they can actually do, and they're actually spectacular off-road,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
they have adventures suited towards that sure. customer base.
Sure, you can be but that person, for sure.
Also the Deer Valley customer base. So next yeah. year, we've gone from the Deer Valley 20-vehicle edition to now the Park City 7-vehicle edition.
Right, they still had them at the back.
They're going to
repaint
build
them.
Two next year. What are we calling it?
The Main Street edition. I don't know.
Quick, get yours while yeah. it doesn't
get
last.
Get yours or? While it's one of two. I, the Defender has been lauded. I've driven it in the 110 and the 130 guys, which I will say this, the two-door 90 intrigues me. It's the only one I haven't driven.
True.
But the other yeah. two that I've driven, I know people that are rabid owners that love them. I have read many things that were just lauding about them, and I have no doubt of their capability.
Off-road, spectacular.
I can't believe what they cost and what I got. Whereas in the Range Rover, ridiculous cost, but I go, okay, yeah.
And the Range Rover can still do all the off-road stuff too, which is amazing.
Which is nuts.
If you don't experience, well, you need to experience both, right?
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Let's move on to Lexus, and I'm going to start with the LC500. That is top of my list for pretty, beautiful, amazing cars. It's not the most dynamic to drive ever,
agreed.
But that's okay.
It is a special car. I have this written down. It's a special car in any trim.
Mm.
And it is, and I've said this prior, and I'll connect the dots here. It is what a grand touring car should be if you aren't paying Aston Martin or Bentley money. This is what it should be. And I've said this many, many times. I think that the guy that grows up through his entire working life and has always wanted to own a Corvette but has never, ever, ever owned a sports car, and then he retires and he decides to treat himself and he buys a Corvette, bought the wrong car, should have bought the LC500. What that person is hoping to get out of a Corvette is what the LC500 will give them. Incredible timeless styling, a really interesting engine, and a wonderful coddling place to be, and it's going to only run.
Yeah,
the Corvette can do a lot of those things, but is actually for the sports car person that would like to step up to a Corvette. LC500, I'm a huge fan of. I didn't like the hybrid as much, but I can understand if you want it. I also have the IS500 because
at second least, on my list. Yep,
at least they put their nice big V8 in that cool sedan.
Spectacular.
Lexus has in that V8 engines in both those cars. That is a cooler, more personality-filled engine than the cars they've put it in.
You're right. Yes. If they had the new interface in the IS500, I would tell everyone to buy IS500s.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's been burdened with that reality. You could get one now with the new interface, but the prior interface was just...
A couple more on my list here.
Agreed, yeah.
2024 GX actually interests me because that is the Lexus version of the Land Cruiser. The styling is great looking.
But I think it's the Land Cruiser you're going to want.
I agree,
because it is a little more aggressive looking, like modern aggressive looking. Mm-hmm. The old Land Cruiser looks back, and it does it very well. But this is like looking forward styling for the Land Cruiser. It has the V6 and not the Turbo 4.
Yes.
And Lexus is leaning into the Range Rover of it all. They are encouraging you. We were at SEMA and it was all over the place. Here was Lexus of all brands with a corner of SEMA, and it was just about taking the GX and making it burly.
Mm-hmm.
It's just them embracing the fact. Who would have literally thought that a Lexus buyer was going to be off doing anything burly with their car? But Lexus has gone, let's embrace it.
Totally.
And so the GX is the nicer Land Cruiser you might actually want instead.
Lexus, you have a big opportunity to come to Park City and open Lexus House on Main Street.
Lexus parking.
Some people are going to go to Range Rover House. Others will go to Lexus House. And sip cocktails and enjoy the ambiance of whatever that means. Last on my list is actually something really intriguing to me, and there's a lot of electrified concepts. Electrified concepts, a keyword, from Lexus, but their sport concept, it just is unnamed, but that looks very track worthy. That looks very interesting, and I welcome that. I cannot wait to drive it in whatever form. Lexus, please bring that.
I have to mention the RX and the NX here. That they have, Lexus is mostly, like everybody else, a sea of SUVs, but the RX is really the car, it's the Lexus egg that kind of started the plague we're on for SUVs and continues to be very solid. I don't personally like it. I don't consider it a standout in the segment, but it can't be denied for its history and the fact that it continues to be very good. The NX is slightly below it. I actually prefer the NX styling. But so those have the new interface now. This is the, if you will, the Cayenne and Macan of the Lexus lineup. And we know they're going to run till the earth stops spinning.
Mm-hmm.
The service is excellent. And these are very competent pieces in the segment, even though they're not the ones I would gravitate toward.
Two more. Lincoln and Lotus are on our list. Mm-hmm. Lincoln has become like Buick. You realize they only build four SUVs?
They only build SUVs, and they all have goofy names. They all have a naming convention they are clinging to desperately in the hopes it will sell vehicles.
Look, I know that there's some brands that we've been hard on, but when I ask the question, who buys a Lincoln, or say, what defines Lincoln style, or what is Lincoln flavor, what is the answer? I feel like a lot of product planners, along with their marketing teams and the design teams, I don't know that they've asked these questions. And if they have, why is it so watered down or so not apparent as to what that brand means? What is that brand to me? Is it off-road? Is it luxury? Everyone builds luxury. So what separates Lincoln from the pack? Is it textures? Is it materials? Is it power? Is it features? The lifestyle? I mean, Range Rover has Range Rover House. Now we've got Lexus House down the street.
The Lincoln Mansion.
What is that going to be?
Lincoln Boutique? The Lincoln rolling cart that you see in the ball. I don't know what it is.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh. The Navigator isn't so baller anymore. The Navigator still exists. That was, they had an opportunity here to make the Navigator like Escalade. The Navigator is some kind of performance crazy thing.
It's the Escalade Alt, but my question about the Navigator, which is a great place to be, it is iconic to your point. The interior is amazing. But I will say, would you buy a Navigator over an Escalade?
No.
That's the problem. And then you're right. If you want to get crazy, there's the Escalade V. The Navigator survives because it is the alt to the one you're probably going to buy, which is the Escalade.
If an advertising campaign is poor for a brand or a car company, they're probably awesome cars and you should go buy one. Wow, they spent a lot of money on that and cool visuals and okay, they used a famous actor. Great. What about Lincoln is interesting and compelling and should draw you away from Range Rover? Is it just like,
great point.
Hey, we're the cheaper Range Rover. What if Lincoln, you leaned into that? I know it's kind of an embarrassing thing to admit, but what if you actually leaned into like, hey, want a Range Rover? We're not as expensive. Come on over.
You're not going off-road anyway, so come on over here.
I mean, it might work.
The
dumbest approaches in marketing are actually the most successful.
All the Lincoln billboards are right outside the Range Rover dealer.
Like, let's
the blocks leading to Range Rover is all Lincoln ads. That's actually really funny.
We're cheap Range Rovers. Come on over.
You could do this. It's just money. You could Google Range Rover, and the first thing that pops up on Google is the sponsored ad for Lincoln.
Yes.
You could totally do that.
Yes.
No, here's the thing. I'll give Lincoln props in one area, and this happened a few years ago, and that is the Lincoln SUVs don't feel like Ford SUVs.
Okay.
They used to.
They used to climb
into any Lincoln product. When we first started the show 10, 15 years ago, you climbed into a Lincoln product, and it was just like, the Ford's right over there, and it's pretty much the same. There was no differentiating them. Right now, the Lincoln SUVs look and feel like they aren't Fords. Meaning feel like they're a step above.
Okay, Lincoln, step above.
Which is a score, but I love that we're just going to connect up the Google search of Range Rover to advertise Lincoln. That's very funny.
I mean, how many ads for Teslas do you see? Not many, and yet they sell.
Yeah, they've just started doing ads, which
they've just started.
Yeah,
I mean, I say that tongue in cheek.
No, there's, but
it's
they
not
didn't
a rule
for
of
a
thumb.
Long time. They didn't at all for.
And
a long
I'm talking
time.
About
You're
all
sure,
car
right.
companies.
Yes,
of course.
I know. Yes.
Car companies want to sell cars. They want to sell products, so they advertise whatever it is. But the hot stuff, they know people are going to buy the M version of anything, right? They just know they're going to come get your AMG. Do I need to advertise AMG? No, you want it.
God, yes.
That's exactly it. Finally, Lotus is on the list. Amira is very high. I love the Amira. It's so
It's very
great
cool.
looking.
It's very cool. Every time I see one in pictures or in person, I just go, wow, they nailed it. Now, I will have to say this. The Amira, depends on who you want to believe, but the reality is that underneath that Amira skin is a lot of Evora.
I was going to say, the Evora GT which, is still compelling, especially the prices are coming down.
But this is the big thing I want to say about the Evora. I feel like automotive journalists in mass slept on the Evora. It wasn't until
Agreed.
Every other car left what the Evora was offering and there was no overlap anymore. They were like, oh, look, the Evora got good. The Evora was always good.
Yeah, true.
The Evora was good in 2010 when they introduced it with a V6 that didn't have a supercharger. Still good. Still a very good car. It needed more power, but that's what the supercharger was for.
Yeah.
So like the 09, 2010, the early Evoras were excellent to drive and they only refined it and it got better. By the time you hit the 400, this is something nobody tells you. When you get the Evora 400, that's 95% of what the GT is for less money. The GT, Evora GT is spectacular, and I am certain, because Lotus has said they don't want direct comparisons, I am certain that the Evora GT is faster around any racetrack of choice than the first edition Amiras.
And I'm sure Amira will have a GT version or some sort of higher
end. I hope they refine it further. We'll see if they do. But the Amira is a completed car. The Evora definitely felt like this was a boutique manufacturer finding parts from where they could.
Mm-hmm.
The Amira feels like we made a very cohesive car using the stuff that worked out of the Evora, which worked much better than people realized. So that's a real execution.
Toyota engine, Volvo buttons.
Yeah, no, nobody's surprised for me to say that the Elise and the Exige are awesome. I have to. I'm an Elise owner. It's required in the contract. But I also am self-aware enough to realize that that's a very difficult car to recommend. It's not for everybody. In fact, it's not for most people that want to buy a sports car.
True, true. The Evora GT just looks compelling to my eye.
The Evora GT is really, really cool. It's a great car. Yeah.
Look, all the e-names, the Evija, British brand, spectacular, unique, interesting, industry-leading styling.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. I wish there were a gas-powered version of it, personally, but
sure.
I do love that car. I think it's brilliant.
Will we ever even see one in person? And then I have to say, under Lotus, because of course they're owned by Geely, and Geely wants to figure out how to monetize their platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we making a Lotus 5,000+ pound SUV electric that feels like three other things that are being made right now?
It doesn't feel like the Lotus recipe.
Mm-mm.
And you know what? At this point, the Lotus recipe is sort of get the engine from over here and some parts from over there, and nobody cares because the chassis tuning and the car is so fun and great to drive.
Yeah.
That's what Lotus flavor is. We can define it. How will that be defined on these platforms, especially like the Amaya, the BEV Hyper GT?
Sure.
It's the sedan version of
we'll see.
Taller SUV. Will those drive like Lotai? Holy moly, we're about out of time. Thank you guys for all your questions. Really appreciate it. Hope you're enjoying the series. We certainly are.
We will circle back to your questions on one of the next podcasts. Some really, really good questions here we want to get into, but we will circle back and get to those in the future. Thank you guys for listening and watching and reaching out to us. Again, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com is our direct email address. We ask for questions on social media, primarily Instagram and Facebook, on Mondays and Thursdays for the podcast recording dates. We have many, many more podcasts coming up. We were just talking about Podcast 900 will come out in May, I believe. That will be another live podcast between now and then. We'll keep doing two a week. And we'll keep mentioning the fact that if you really want to drive your car hard, you can go to hookedondriving.com and find a track day near you. And I will also mention we're going back to the Ring and Spa again this year. I can't believe it. It's really cool.
Amazing.
We're going back in October. Space is available right now. 2 days on Spa, 1 day on the Ring, and a road tour in amazing cars. At least one of us, maybe both of us, will be there in October. So you can go to Hooked on Driving right now. It's the first thing on the homepage. We'd love to have you with us.
Write to us. You know where to find us. Looking forward to hearing from you. Cheers, everyone.